Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This episode is sponsored by Kendo UI. Kendo UI allows you to build better apps faster. They have a comprehensive library ranging from data grids and charts to buttons and sliders. Plus, you can use their components as plain JavaScript as well as in Angular, React, and Vue. They have a large collection of customizable popular themes like Bootstrap and Material. Go check them out at reactroundup.com/kendoui. Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of React Roundup. This week on our panel, we have Lucas Heisch.
Hello from New York.
Justin Bennett.
Howdy, also from New York.
I'm Charles Max Wood, devchat.tv, and I'm just going to throw out there real quick. I'm getting there on the Get a Coder Job book, so go check it out. We have a special guest, and that is Peter. How do you say your name, Peter?
Mbanugo.
Awesome. And do you want to introduce yourself real quick?
Hey, I'm Peter Mbanugo from Nigeria, software developer. I work with Field Intelligence, where we build offline fed supply management systems. We also have some other products for drug distribution also. So I also do some technical writing and a few other things outside of coding.
Awesome. Well, you wrote this blog post about a real-time editable data grid in React.
Yeah.
Which sounded really interesting. And I thought maybe we could just start there with what you built and how it works, and then we can dive into some of the more specific things that are there.
Yeah, it's a real-time editable data grid that it allows you to have some data on a data table that you can edit and then have the data updates synchronized across any connected browsers or devices. And I built that with Harmony Sync. Harmony Sync is a real-time state synchronization service that allows you to store and synchronize an application state in real time. It has a simple API that helps you avoid designing context-based logic from scratch, persists state, and handles conflicts to a good extent. And for the blog, I did a basic demo that I just plugged in with React Table and hooked it up to a couple functions to be able to get data updates as connects and update the React app.
That's cool.
Yeah, Peter, one question. I was looking at the post and I saw that you also built the Harmony Sync service, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I built that after I had a couple of, I worked with real-time stuff a bit sometime in the past and a bit this year. One of it was trying to do a language exchange application, which required me doing some real-time chat. And most of the time when I've done something like this, I had to use maybe some Socket.io or some similar open source libraries. And most of the time I have to figure out a way to design how the messages will go across the channel and how to persist the messages. And then I built a chat API that allows you to easily plug into applications and connect and broadcast it to also persist. But that is still in the backlog. I didn't follow up with that. Then I decided to work on Harmony Sync, which is basically just for application state and provide real-time API and avoid me always repeating the task of having to figure out what to name my channels or how to design and where to persist data. So I wanted a simple API to do that. That's how I built Harmony Sync and blog about it, marketing. And hopefully by next month, I should be able to launch a product.
That's really awesome. So this Harmony service says, just reading your marketing material, says that it handles going offline. So that's a really challenging problem, something that I've been playing around with, like service workers and stuff, to kind of work through recently. How are you kind of solving that problem?
For Harmony Sync, it's basically maybe doing some intermittent connection, maybe when you are already connected and you lose connections all of a sudden. And then when the network is back on, it tries to publish any requests you made to the server. If you did them while offline, it would get some new, it would get the latest of the state if you're already working with an application state, but they didn't make any changes. So you typically, maybe if you are not connected and you try to initialize the SDK, it won't connect because it will need to make connection to the server. It only does that maybe for irregular connections or scenarios where the connection is breaking.
That's awesome.
And in those scenarios too, if two users make changes to the data at the same time, it tries to pick one of them and broadcast that as the latest change.
This is really interesting, and I believe that this is one of the hardest problems to solve, this concurrency, changing stuff in real time from different clients. So like every time I try to do something like really simple to tackle that problem, I already got into so many problems. And so like, yeah. Congratulations for having the courage to build such a system.
Yeah.
So that's a great point. So when you have, like, let's say you have someone who's interacting with one of these applications, like through mobile, and they make an update, but they lose connectivity, and then maybe somebody makes an update on the same table, like, is the Harmony service like handling all of that kind of behind the hood or behind the scenes? Or
yeah, when both makes changes and they both get to the server, it would pick the first one to hit the server, and then if the other person connects later on, it would give him the latest change of from what the other user who was able to connect first made and discard its own change.
Oh, that's awesome. I'd be interested in like the diffing algorithms that are needed to be able to like sync data in those scenarios are kind of crazy difficult. It'd be really interesting to dig into that.
Yeah.
Last time I tried to do something related to that, I had a friend that he said like, oh, I was trying to do something, so I'm going to send you some links. And I thought they were like simple blog posts and they were like complicated papers. And I was like, whoa, okay. So it's not an easy task.
Yeah, it's offline and data synchronization are quite pretty hard. I myself am learning almost every day. And there are a couple of ways people and services go about it. I think CouchDB has a good way of doing that too, and using some deterministic approach. A couple of months ago, I also read something about, I think conflict-free replicated data types. I also considered that later while building HarmonySync, but didn't think that was the way to go. And I didn't want it to be something heavy on the client. So it was just to do something that would be lightweight on the client and also serve the same purpose.
Okay, so if I set up HarmonySync connection and I'm using bringing back to the React world, right? So you have to work with it in kind of a reactive way, like with observables and something like that, right? You need to like listen to events and react to that. So how do you think in your experience, how did React work in this world? I've heard a lot of people say that they have the opinion that if you work with observables and things like that, React is not the best framework for that. So what are your opinions on that?
Well, I haven't worked a lot with observables, the RSGS library too. But I think React's reactivity system is quite okay. And I just plug into that and either use callbacks, events, but not those other observables. I have no experience in that direction. I can't offer some preferences on that. But I think they are quite good. I've seen a couple of talks on them, and I think they are quite good to work with.
Yep, nice.
I was going back to look at some of the... I was trying to remember the name of the algorithms that I was kind of reading up on for like synchronizing the data. So there's I guess, two types that I know of. So operational transformations and CRDTs. CRDT is conflict commutative replicated data types or conflict-free replicated data types, something like that. I don't know. Back in the day, I was playing around with ShareJS, which kind of provide some of that implementation, but I haven't looked at it in a long time. That's a really hard problem.
Yep, definitely. Like when we start working with the offline world, we were bringing like a new time variable to everything we do, right? So back when we could still lock things and make sure that we have like IDs, like this particular session is only going to communicate through this device and things like that. Now that we have like multiple devices and they can be really far from each other in terms of time, like I can be like offline for 1 hour and then I have a bunch of updates that I need to send to the same server. I think this is a really complicated world. It's even one could say that there are a lot of techniques that now we use in UI that are similar to those problems, because UI is the same thing. You have a long living process and people are just sending events to your screen. You need to react to them. You need to make sure that your UI is on states that are not impossible to get and communicates well with the services. This is definitely a hard problem we're solving now.
Yeah, I'm glad that like some of these problems are a little bit more approachable now. So I think for the longest time, just because of the complexity involved in, you know, not just like solving data synchronization, but even like interacting with applications with an intermittent internet connection, that's kind of made a lot of, you know, our products or things that we build not really approachable to those who might have like not a great network connection and I also think about things like how does, you know, performance play into this whole story too. I mean, so it not only like synchronizing data offline, but like what if you're, you know, intermittent connection and you're trying to download this service worker or whatever, just so you can have offline support. But if it's like, you know, really huge, that could be interrupted and then you can't use the application anyway. So these are like problems that I'm glad to see that there's more initiatives to tackle these.
Yes. The interesting thing is that I believe that today in the mobile world, it affects everyone, no matter where they are. Like back in Brazil, we had problems with connections because it is Brazil and some areas you just like can't have a good connection. And now living in New York, when you think, oh, it's super developed world, like just enter subway and you also lose your connection from time to time. So I think this is a problem that affects probably like anywhere in the world. If you are on mobile, you'll be offline at some point, right? So you need to deal with that problem.
Yeah, I agree. I think initially I thought offline and this connectivity issues were something we experienced here in West Africa because of connection issues, which also got me really interested in offline first. Well, seeing the advancement in the web world and with service workers, background sync, and some other libraries trying to help solve that problem, I think it's a general problem, and gradually we are getting to a better solution to solve them. And I think some days ago, one of our colleagues went out for some demo training, and our application had to load on first online to get some data. And because the connection was very, very slow, he couldn't even start up the app, and it felt like it was not working. And it took a couple of minutes before it was able to at least pull down service workers and get a few things set up for it to work, which is also really hard.
So how does that change your development workflow? What are the kind of things that you think about when developing an application that might pretty much always be either offline or in a really slow connection?
Well, I think the important thing is making application very, really lightweight, because that will help save files that are even on a very slow connection. These days, there are a lot of libraries and packages for building things, and developers would usually tend to add them all up to their applications to maybe ease up the programming, make things look cool, and they really do not know how this affects users in different regions. So I think being able to care how much you are passing down the wire to your users is really important. The days before we had fast connections, today pages were maybe a few kilobytes of size, and they would still maybe not up to a minute go down the wire and to their destination. But with the way it is today, you see applications that could take up to 5 megabytes of data to just load the page for the first time. And it's really frustrating for first-time users. And some other things to also consider is how your users would use the application and in what regions, which could guide you in maybe things to factor in your development. Some applications might just need service workers and maybe IndexedDB to store some data online. Some are quite intensive, and you could plug in something like CouchDB to communicate for complex scenarios, or maybe some other services like that to help you solve that. And I think also I've seen AWS AppSync, which I've not really tried, and I think it's quite a cool solution to also consider during development of such applications.
I'd like to give a little bit of a shout out to the Chrome team. So the audits tab in the Chrome Devs Tools has basically runs this tool called Lighthouse, which is it's a performance tool, but it does a lot of like sort of different things. It, you know, can test for like accessibility, best practices, SEO, stuff like that. But it has some good kind of sane defaults. So it does things like CPU throttling and trying to test like mobile first. I know a lot of times, especially when I started just learning about performance, I didn't think enough about like the types of devices users would be using when they're interacting with the site. So, you know, even optimizing for like over the wire payload, just like, yeah, I want to have that gzip size as small as possible. If your uncompressed size is like really, really huge, the devices still have to parse all of that and, like, you know, run it. So that's also a consideration that we should always be mindful of. And the if you haven't used it before, the audits tab on Chrome DevTools really helps think about some of those things.
Deploy more, pay less with DigitalOcean, the simplest all-in-one cloud computing platform for developers. Scale and run cloud applications faster and more efficiently with effortless administration tools to robust compute, flexible configurations, networking services, real-time alerts, and rapid provisioning while enjoying industry-leading price to performance with a flat pricing structure across all global data center regions at any usage volume. Spend more time building better web apps and less time worrying about managing infrastructure with DigitalOcean. Build your next app on DigitalOcean. Get started with a free $100 credit at do.co/roundup.
Peter, are there any like performance related tools that you use to kind of test, you know, maybe the over the wire payloads or download speeds or, you know, any sort of optimization tools?
For now, I still use the Chrome DevTools, the audits panel, and to look up to see how the app performs. Why sometimes we would usually go on a field trip with our users to see how the application behaves in those environments, and also for mobile users, get similar phones to what they are using, usually some low-end phones, and try to test how the application performs in those environments too.
Cool, cool. Lucas, same sort of question. Are there any like performance-related tools that you use or think about that kind of helps?
Yeah, this is an interesting question because 1 year ago when I joined ZocDoc here, that was my first mission in the company. Like, we were very, even though the website was doing pretty well on SEO, we were a little bit in the dark. We didn't know like how good we were, and we were doing a big migration, and it was not clear the actual impact of performance of the migration that we were making. So my first mission here was to start using a tool that I used back in B2W, my previous job, which is called SpeedCurve. And it's an amazing tool, and only gets better. This is like, if your company needs to acquire a tool, SpeedCurve is really great. And now, I think it's been 2 months already, they have the Lighthouse measurements on them in their dashboards, integrated with their dashboards from their servers. So you can also like follow through time your scores and all the analysis to understand how to act also on performance. So this is the tool we use today, and they have both synthetic and real user monitoring. So when we are measuring things on our Chrome, usually it's like it's a picture of your machine. Usually dev development machines are better than the general public machines. So we have like a very biased picture of things. And I like that they make both like synthetic, like laboratory kind of measurements that they can film your page and then compare through time how things are going, analyze your assets. And they also have the real user monitoring stuff that you put some code on your application. It collects statistics from real users. I've used New Relic before too, that they have a similar thing, but it's more complete with error handling and things like that. I believe those tools are a great help. And I'm pretty sure there are some open source initiatives now, but I still did not play with any of those.
Have you tried Calibre?
No, I didn't. I didn't try. We looked at it because of the, they have this, they're based on Lighthouse, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, similar.
Yeah, so we wanted to have that, like we wanted to see the Lighthouse numbers through time. But a speed curve, the other benefits of speed curve were more important for us in that moment. And now speed curve also has the lighthouse measurements. So I'm happy. So do you use Calibre?
No, I've seen, read a few of their blogs and how they do things. And those are one of the things I would like to try out soon. And once we are about to implement or incorporate something for our solutions here too. Interesting, you use speed curve. I think I'll check that out too.
Yep. Yeah. Well, yeah. Calibre seems really cool too.
Yeah. I also used speed curve at my last job, and it's really great. One of the things that I think is a little bit underrated is that it gives really great visualizations that are kind of easy for people to see. So we used speed curve to kind of tell the performance story, which is something that is a really important thing, especially if you have to, you know, report to executive members of staff. It's like, you know, performance is hard to describe and it's a complicated problem, but having like good visualizations where they can kind of see like where we're at, how we're doing relative to where we were, is pretty powerful.
Yeah. And so this is, I have an interesting story about in my previous job in B2W, we used a speed curve to monitor also both real users and the synthetic measurements. And our website was getting slower and slower. Like every month it would get slower a little bit in our real users. And we were making it better and faster. So in the synthetic measurements, we were getting faster, but in the real user monitor, we were getting slower. So we thought there was problems with the tool and things like that. We could not understand, like for at least, I don't know, like an afternoon, that crazy puzzle was in our minds. We were like, what is happening to our application that it's getting slower as it gets faster? And it turns out that as the application was getting slower, more people were starting to use it on mobile.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
More people are being able to use it on mobile. So the real user speed was going up because more people were using mobile. As soon as we start like differentiating desktop from mobile, we saw what was happening. So the share of mobile users was increasing because performance was getting better. So if you put everything and you look like on overall average of the time, it was getting slower. So that was an interesting lesson on like how to look at data, how to interpret data, how to get knowledge and insights from it. And really interesting.
So on desktop, it was getting better, but for the mobile users, it was slower.
No, actually, it was getting better for everyone, but more people were migrating to mobile. So more users were using the website from their cell phones. So as more users were using their cell phones, the average performance of our users was going up. Yeah, so it's interesting because since you made the website faster, more people were able to use mobile. But yeah, you need to explain that really well in a report.
So taking the conversation back to React really quick. Yeah, so the usage of React Table in your blog post, Peter, was pretty interesting. I've tried to use several table implementations in the past. The primary one that I've used is Hansen Table, and that kind of goes back to the jQuery days when I started using that. But it's always a really challenging problem, and I often find that a lot of these implementations kind of are hard to use. So, Peter, what was your experience with React Table? What'd you like about it? What problems did it give you?
Well, React Table is quite light, I think less than 5 kilobytes in size. And I think it handles quite a good amount of data on the client. I haven't really had that much of a problem with it, which I think is quite okay to use. And the other ones, I haven't really tried them. I just know about them, but I haven't really tried.
Cool, cool. Lucas or Charles, have y'all used any other table implementations?
Yeah, so I could always escape from those problems too. I never worked with either like big tables that need to have rendering optimizations in order to render the massive data, or tables that need to be edited and stuff like that. So I don't have a lot of experience with those components, only playing here and there. And it's always like very interesting because it's one of those components that are fighting a little bit the web, I'll just say the platform, and it's always a good source of interesting solutions.
Yeah, and I've played with a few. I've kind of fiddled with my own for certain things. And then I've also, for the most part, I've used things that don't do the sync part of this, but they have all of the like editable data grid kind of things. So Kendo UI has one, I think. Oh, what's the Grape City one? Anyway, so they kind of have these nice sortable, editable data tables is another one that I've played with. So they kind of come with a bunch of features plugged in. And I find that I either need something that's really, really bare bones that just kind of displays the data, or I need something that, or at least I want something that's a little more interactive. And so I reach for Kendo UI, or I think another one that I've seen but haven't played with is AG Grid. So yeah, I tend to go to one extreme or the other. And I generally don't build that particular part of the solution myself.
Yeah, it's a really hard problem, especially just the problem of like having this really long, indefinite list of things potentially that you have to render out. A library that's been on my radar recently is React Window. It's by one of the React core team members. I forget his name though. Anyway, it optimizes like long lists. So as you scroll through them, it doesn't like render the entire list. It just kind of renders the things that are kind of in the current window, or you know, above and below a certain extent. Brian Vaughn. Yeah. That's it. But that's a really cool library. So if you're thinking about rolling your own table, which I don't recommend.
It's one of those interesting problems to try to tackle a little bit as a learning tool, but quickly like you find so many edge cases and so many optimizations that you need to do that you just reach out to a good tool. This is also like an interesting question. Like how do y'all decide when to actually start using a library? Is it as early as you can? Like first of all, you try to find libraries for your problems. Do you try to like a problem like that? Do you try a little bit yourself to see where it goes? What is your thought process on that?
Well, I think it depends on what I'm trying to solve. For data tables, I've always used something built by others. I think the people that does Kendo UI used to do something for ASP.NET Web Forms back in the days. And I was practically using their products for applications in the .NET world. And for JavaScript, I basically look for some libraries and maybe based on popularity and how easy to use it is in the documentation.
I think this is a really fascinating question. And it's one of those things where I don't think there's a one size fits all answer. So to me, it's always a balance between product deliverable needs, like, you know, shipping as whenever you need to ship, what the actual needs of the product are. Is there a library that fits those needs? You know, performance, testing, maintenance, like all those sorts of things. Like if the library is popular and well-maintained, then, you know, it's code that you don't have to maintain. But if it falls out of popularity, if it, you know, isn't maintained anymore, there can be risk associated with that. On the other hand, if you're doing it yourself, then you have the debt of maintaining that. So it's a pretty fine balance. One of the things that I find myself doing a lot on like personal projects is I will default to using a library first for any feature that is relatively large, but not like critical to what I'm doing. You know, it'd be one thing if I'm like building a spreadsheet service, then I might want to think about like, you know, custom table implementation potentially. But if there's like a pretty like hairy feature and there's a library for it, I'm going to default to that until I need, you know, my needs like justify going in and changing it or customizing it in some way. And even then, one thing I would recommend people do, and it's a great pleasure of working at Artsy, is we have a motto of, you know, rely on the open source community and give back. So just because you want to change something doesn't necessarily mean you still can't use a library. I mean, if it's open source, you can always contribute and try to get that feature in. It's a great way to learn, but it all goes down to like what your needs are.
Yeah. I think in a similar way, it's probably the same answer as buy or build, right? When you are able to buy a tool or something like that and or build it in-house. It's all a matter of if it's the more generic things are, the less you want to try, you would like to spend time on that because you want to differentiate yourself, right? So some problems are already really well solved. Like you can go to the extreme of like versioning control. Like I love Git, I love GitHub. I don't need to create a GitHub just to start coding, right? So I'm going to use GitHub. So, and if you go on that beginning of the spectrum until like the libraries you use, there's like a cutting point. Find that cutting point is complicated sometimes. And I've already, because I've been burned from both sides, I've been burned from both trying to do in-house something that is simple today and when it's evolving, becomes a big burden on us and it's not something that we should be working on. It's not our product. And on the other side, we've been burned about like abstracting too early, like getting something too early and that library doesn't scale well with our other problems. And then we need to choose a different one. And so I've been burned by both sides. I find it interesting that Peter is here today because he actually created a complete service for real-time updating. So this is interesting. So if you're going to build, try to make a business out of it, right?
Yeah, sometimes.
Charles, I'm curious what your approach is. I know that you have like a whole lot of stuff going on, and I'm sure that there are some different considerations of when to build versus when to use something off the shelf. Kind of what's your thought process around that?
My process for a lot of this stuff is if I can find something off the shelf, I will use it. Generally, the amount of time it takes me to build something versus what it costs to run a service or, you know, to pay somebody for a service, it's not even close, right? My time adds up much more quickly than the dollars do. So yeah, if I have the choice, I'll pay for something off the shelf. That said, I only mess around for so long, though, before I give up. Oh, there's nothing out there that does exactly what I need, and then I'll go build it. So one example of this is I tried for a long time to run things with like Google Docs and Zapier for the podcasts. Mm-hmm. And I finally just gave up, right? With all the different scheduling and outreach and all the other things that I have to do. I got kind of close with Zapier, but it's still, it's basically, it just ties together a bunch of other systems. And I got to the point where I realized that I just needed to put something together that would, you know, that would just do what I needed to. And so I started building it in Ruby on Rails. So yeah. So as far as, yeah, when I opt for one or the other, if I can't find something that will do enough of what I need, then I opt for paying or building something, but generally I'll just go and pay for it and see how close I can get.
I like that approach.
Yeah, I think we don't do a very good job in general of valuing our time or like understanding how much or how expensive time is. So that's a really good point.
Yeah, it's hard. And I think a lot of times as well, I mean, I'm in the position where I own the business and, you know, I spend a lot of time doing the podcast production and management stuff. And so my time being a value is more of a thing for me. I think a lot of times it's easier to fall into the trap if no matter what you do, as long as you're showing up to work, they're going to keep sending you a paycheck. So unless you're falling behind on the other things that they've put out as expectations, and not all businesses are good at that, you can go out and you can work on more or less whatever you need to get the job done. And sometimes that's building something that you don't necessarily need to build. And, you know, I'm not saying this is a universal problem, but it is a trap that I've seen a number of people fall into. So
I've found myself in situations where I'm looking around and thinking like, we are not all working on what we should be working. Right. That sensation. So like, this is not what is going to bring business like to the place where we want it to be. Like we're losing time. This is like productive time that we are using with stuff that is not like our business, our main mm-hmm. focus. So I think we should work as much as we can on what is our core product, what is our main focus. Like try to get your customers and make them like have a better life, something like that. You know, like you need to be on the mission of your company. And I even believe that probably the web community that's starting doing that most and did well was the Ruby community that you're a big part of, right, Charles? Like it was always about having solutions and focusing on the product, right?
Generally, yes. But even then, I've seen a lot of Rubyists fall into this trap too.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and I think that the JavaScript and React community now I believe that we have some tools that are very like focused and well developed and things like that. But as we all know, it's super easy to fall. We are all developers, engineers. We all love to play with building blocks. So
that's true. Yeah.
I have to say that I've actually had a few people have to remind me, dude, you're a developer. You can fix this problem, you know, because I complain. I've spent years looking for the right solution. And they're like, yeah, if you spent years looking for it, it's either not out there or not easy to find. And dude, you're a developer. And so
that's it.
I opt so strongly the other way sometimes that I need that reminder that, hey, you know, I can go build it myself.
Yeah.
The thing that I struggle with a lot is just really estimating like what the difficulty of something is. So I'll be like, oh yeah, I don't know of a good solution for this. And I am a developer. I can build it. But then like I start on it and then I realize like all the steps that I need to take to get to wherever I need to be for this thing to be useful. And it comes back to, is this valuable enough for me to invest this much time on? And a lot of times I end up stopping like partway down that path just because I realize that the value that the final solution will provide me doesn't really justify the time sink. Unfortunately, though, generally, I don't find that out until I've invested a good chunk of time into it.
And then the sunken cost bias kicks in and you're like, oh, I already did all this work. Why do not just finish it? And then you are in the middle of an iceberg and you still need to do 90% of the work sometimes, right?
Yep. All right. Anything else we want to jump on here before we go to picks?
I'm good.
Oh, Peter, if people want to find you online or go check out Harmony, where do they go?
You can check out Harmony on harmony.tech, HAMONI.tech. And you can find me on Twitter, P_MBANUGO. Pretty much most of my stuff on Twitter and on the DevTools blog. Usually there, and they can feel free to message me anytime.
All right. Sounds good. Well, let's go ahead and do some picks. Justin, do you have some picks for us? Is your job search stuck? Maybe you're not getting any interviews with employers, or maybe you are, but no job offers. Or you may be new and not even know where to start. This is Charles Max Wood, and I'm releasing a new course and ebook on how to find a job as a software developer. The course walks you through the process of finding the types of companies you want to work for, getting their attention, and putting your best foot forward as the candidate they want. I've coached dozens of developers in looking for jobs and have been able to help several people find jobs within 2 weeks to 2 months. So whether you're new to development, can't find a great job that fits what you want, or are looking for remote work from an area without a strong tech community, I can help. Go to getacoderjob.com and sign up today.
Sure. Yeah. I've got two picks. One is, I guess, a little bit personal. I work at Artsy and we have an engineering blog. Kind of encourage all of our engineers to contribute to this as a part of like our learning journey. So not everything on here is like super well refined, well thought out things. A lot of it is just like us learning and figuring out technology. So I highly recommend checking out the Artsy blog, and you know, all of our stuff is open source as well. So if you see references to things in the blog, you probably can find production code. The other thing, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts lately, and I'm kind of on an entrepreneurial kick where I'm just really consuming a lot of entrepreneurial content. So if you've never heard of the site Indie Hackers, it's a really awesome site that kind of gives interviews to startup founders or just company founders, and it gives a lot of really interesting information like revenue statistics, and it's a really awesome resource, and they also have a podcast. So if you're interested in entrepreneurial stuff, that's great.
All right, Lucas, what are your picks?
All right, my pick today is a blog post from a blog that is one of those that changes your mind forever. It's one of the best sources for learning functional programming. The author is called Scott Lushing. I don't know how to pronounce that. I'll put the link up. And his blog is called F-Sharp for Fun and Profit. But the concepts he talks about, they're not only F-Sharp related. It's like programming in general. And this post is called 13 Ways of Looking at a Turtle. He implements like a simple, I don't know if you all remember the logo programming language that you like make a turtle, like pen down, walk forward, turn to the right, walk forward a little bit more. It was like a kid's programming language back when I was in school. And then he talks about like 13 ways of implementing that. And he touches probably like every big way of looking at programming, from object-oriented techniques to functional programming techniques to, I don't know, even logic programming techniques, some of them. So this post is really amazing. That's my pick for the day.
All right, cool. I'm going to jump in here with a couple of picks. We talked around some of the concepts of a book I just finished. And so I'm going to call out the book and then I'm going to just, you know, really quickly make the connection. The book is The One Thing. And it talks about, you know, what is the one thing that can make things easier or make things so that you don't have to do them anymore. And it, you know, we talked a little bit about, okay, should you build it or buy it, you know, or subscribe to it or whatever. And yeah, you know, it's that same kind of focus, you know, it's what can I do right now that's going to have the biggest impact on whether or not I need to continue doing something or things like that. And so, you know, just that recommendation, just look at it from the standpoint of what, you know, what's going to mitigate a whole bunch of effort. You know, what's going to save me the most time? What's going to have the biggest impact on the big thing that we're about at whatever company you work for? So I'm going to throw that out there. I have a few other things coming along. One of them is, I guess it's kind of an announcement. So I am finishing up the Get a Coder Job book and video course. As we record this, it'll be out next week. So if you want to go out and pick it up, if you're looking for a job, you're trying to find your first job, or you know, you're not sure you have enough experience to get your next job, or if you're working remotely, I kind of treat all three of those in the book. Most of the concepts are the same. Some things change for remote, but they're pretty minor things. It's just kind of in the approach you use to get noticed. But yeah, definitely check that out, getacoderjob.com. One other thing that I just set up is I've had a lot of people asking me for t-shirts and mugs and stuff like that with the podcast artwork on them. And so if you go to swag.devchat.tv, I've been putting that artwork up. And so you can pick that up there. And then finally, I set up a Kickstarter, and it'll be interesting to see how this all goes. But the project is called codebadge.org. And what it is I want to build an application, because I get asked by people all the time, how do I stay current? And I give people general guidelines, but most people, they kind of need the step-by-step process, and I'll probably wind up making a course on this to keep current. But I thought, well, what if there was like a badge or some kind of, you know, social proof that people could use to say, hey, I've spent a couple hours, you know, studying Webpack, or I've built a Webpack config, or I've built an app with Redux, or I've built an app with MobX, or, you know, so just things like that. And so it'll allow people to basically claim the badges for the things they've worked on, and allow them to link back into pull requests or projects on GitHub, so that they can say, I've done blah, blah, blah with MobX. Here's the badge, right? And then if somebody clicks on their badge, then it'll take them and it'll show them, they built the, you know, here's the project they built with MobX, and they can see what they did with it. So anyway, kind of a fun idea. It's up on Kickstarter, and I'd really appreciate the support. If you go to codebadge.org, it should have a link on there that'll take you there. And you can also sign up for the launch email for when that goes live. So anyway, sorry to plug all the stuff I'm working on, but that's kind of where I've been thinking. Peter, what are your picks?
Well, I have a couple. I think the first one for me is a JavaScript library called Hudi. It's an open source, fast and simple backend as a service that you can use to build offline first JavaScript apps. And you can find it on hud.ie on the internet. My second pick is a podcast by Reid Hoffman of LinkedIn, Masters of Skill, where he interviews a couple of business owners, founders, on how they scale and grow their businesses, which I think is really interesting for people looking to go into the entrepreneurial world. And the third one is a book which I've read and I love. It's titled Ego is the Enemy. It draws on a vast array of stories and examples from literature to philosophy, and offers a couple of strategies and tactics that we can use to enhance and develop personally. And the fourth one is also a book titled Essentialism and the Disciplined Pursuit of Less. And it's not a time management book, but it offers a systematic discipline of how to discern what is absolutely essential and eliminate things that are not important. There are chapters that talks about how to uncommit from things you've said yes to, and offer some tips on how to say no to request. And I think the last one, I would just like to say that Harmonious Inc. will be launching in September on Product Hunt, and you should check it out and subscribe to get more info and help get some upvotes when we launch. That's all for me.
All right, very cool. Well, thank you for coming and talking to us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, well, we'll go ahead and wrap this episode up, and we will Catch everyone next week.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.